plastic. It's everywhere, though you've stopped noticing. Captain Charles Moore noticed it while sailing his ship across the Pacific, and the experience turned him towards science. So what happened out there on the sea?
Well, that's just it. You know, one wants to think of it as an event, as an aha moment, as something dramatic. However, in science, it's more like a creeping awareness that something has changed. There's something that needs to be understood here. And that's what it was for me. It was a week's transit of the doldrums in 1997, the largest El Nino on record, when the lazy plastic floating to the surface of the ocean was allowed to rest there because there wasn't much wave action. So for an entire week crossing these doldrums, I couldn't come on deck without seeing some shard of plastic floating by. I played a game. I said, this time when I come on deck, I'm not going to see anything. And I'd always lose the bet. So I came back 2 years later with scientific measuring equipment and took samples. And when we analyzed those samples in our laboratory, we found, to our shock and amazement, 6 times the weight of plastic as the weight of the zooplankton in our samples. There was more plastic than plankton.
Incredible. And how's it progressed since then? You've taken part in various actions to do something about it. What have you done?
Basically, what I've done is to start the plastic conversation. You know, plastic has kind of surreptitiously become the material of our age without our really having understood it, without our having made any serious evaluation of where it belongs in our lives. It's a two-pronged approach. One is a materials issue. We need green chemists, green engineers to fabricate plastics that don't pollute, that biodegrade, or that are marine degradable. Those are two different things, biodegradability versus marine degradability. And then we also have this concept of reduction of the amount of material in our lives. Frankly, we're drowning in junk. It's simply a world in which we have constant maintenance for our crap.
Well, Captain Charles Moore, may I tell you what happened to me just a few days ago on a Sunday? I went for a run around actually Parramatta River, part of Sydney Harbour, and I thought I'd do an experiment in two places. I would pick up the plastic on the shore down by the water. And in the first 100 metres, I picked up something like 10 kilos. And about half a kilometre onwards, I picked up something that was so heavy I could barely carry it to the bins, and it had to fill up 2 bins. On the scale of that part of Sydney Harbour, which is supposed to be pristine, there's so much that it makes you want to give up.
I'm extremely pessimistic. This plastic culture, this throwaway society, this use once and toss mentality has gone global. And there's no safety warning on the label saying, look, you may have been working with banana leaves or wicker baskets before. They biodegraded. This stuff won't. It's not going away. You can't drop it on the road or by the riverbank and have it disappear next time you come along. It's going to be added to by the next piece you drop and the next piece you drop. And it's going to be there not only for your children, but for their great-grandchildren on into the infinite future. This kind of information is not being disseminated.
Thinking laterally, going back to that ocean and the ocean gyres, which are actually formed by the winds and the currents, and you've got some surface area bobbing with plastic twice the size of France, is it possible to stick some sort of floating factory there, maybe that's powered by solar power, to be a recycling place on the ocean where you could actually process that plastic to make something different?
No, the short answer. You're talking about a very dispersed quantity, perhaps a handful per football pitch. It's not like your walk along the riverbank. The shore is like a comb that brushes out the plastic from the ocean. In the deep ocean, you don't have that kind of mechanism. You've got a dispersal mechanism, and it really doesn't create an island. And a lot of people have this vision. They want to create fanciful factories for processing plastic. These gyres are 40% of the world ocean. These high-pressure subtropical gyres correspond roughly to the deserts on land of the planet, both north and south of the equator. 40% of the world ocean is one quarter of the surface area of the Earth. You're not going to sweep that up with any kind of a broom that technology can invent, especially since scientists estimate that up to 27 times the amount that's on the surface is dispersed down into the water column through wave action. You're just not able to process that much water. It's just not doable.
And of course, the way that the plastic then disintegrates, you've got very fine portions of it throughout the top part of the water as well.
Yeah, plastic photodegrades as opposed to biodegrades. Photodegradation is a process of embrittlement by which the plastic polymer molecules kind of stick little fingers into each other and make them stiff and crack rather than bend. And that photodegradation process results in a kind of microplastic pollution that is incredible in its extent. And as the particles become smaller, they act like the water column itself. The water appears extremely viscous to a tiny plastic particle, and you don't get the kind of flotation back to the surface that you would get with a larger particle. So what you get is the movement of water in the ocean with tiny plastic particles in it is now part of the ocean realm. The ocean has become this plastic soup, and there's no way we're going to be able to strain this soup. And the soup has some customers out there. The soup is attractive as a food source to innumerable creatures. I think every trophic level is consuming plastic.
Mistaking it for something else.
Absolutely. Like having a really good plastic fake apple mixed in with your apples at the supermarket, and you grab a handful of apples to put in your cart, you might once in a while get a phony plastic one. There are orange, amphipod, krill-like plastics out there, I've seen them under the microscope, that are spitting images of the real thing. And most of the feeding that goes on in the ocean is not discriminatory. It's simply filtering out stuff. These mucus web-feeding jellies and salps don't taste their food or locate it. They simply process water, and anything solid in there is historically biodegradable. Now we've put a non-biodegradable component in there, and it's filling up the ocean with non-nutritive, non-digestible, polluted plastic. Putting the ocean on a polluted plastic diet is not a good thing.
To what extent are the various creatures, the fish, the birds, not harmed by their ingestion of this plastic?
Well, there's certainly the possibility of passing some of the plastic through the digestive system. We looked at 671 fish in our trawls and found 35% of them had ingested an average of 2 pieces of plastic each. Now, whether or not that plastic will make it through, we discovered certain plastics. The mouth is normally bigger than the anus in a fish, and you can't necessarily pass everything that goes in through the other end. But we did find plastics too big to pass. We found plastics small enough to pass. But an example of what happens when there's a lot of plastic in the ocean just occurred in Hong Kong when there was a container spill of 6 containers of the pre-production plastic pellets. These are 5-millimeter pellets about the size of fish feet. When these drifted into the cages of the fish farms in Hong Kong, the fish thought it was Christmas. They were used to eating pelletized food. They ate up all these plastic pellets that floated in from this container spill. They turned belly up. They couldn't pass them through their digestive system, even though they're only 5 millimeters in diameter, and it wiped out the fish farming industry in Hong Kong. So it's not a benign kind of, you know, getting a little fiber with your food. It's more like a poison pill.
And, of course, we've covered the extent of the shearwater, the birds, especially the consumption of sometimes like 267 different pieces into one small stomach. But what's the news from Antarctica today?
Well, we thought that the circumpolar current, as fierce as it is, was kind of a barrier to plastic pollution. But the Terra expeditions trawled using our protocols and our equipment, the surface waters leading from Antarctica, and we found in our laboratory analysis up to 50,000 pieces per square kilometer of these microplastic pieces populating the Southern Ocean. So that circumpolar current is not acting like the fence we thought it would to keep out these plastics, but is allowing them to gradually penetrate. Now, the problem with that is that there's hitchhikers on these plastics. These plastics immediately start getting a biofilm. That biofilm then is followed by bryozoans, by algae, by barnacles, by other species. that have a long time to acclimate to these colder waters because of the slow progression of plastic through the ocean realm. So generations can evolve of these creatures that are being hitchhiked into the Antarctic such that they may be able to displace the creatures that should be living there.
Captain, so much for the problem. Any successes that you can report to make us feel rather more cheerful about this?
Well, we certainly have initiatives here in Australia like the deposit bills and schemes to put value on resources. Really, truly, there's no such thing as waste. It's just simply a matter of learning how to recover the resource that we haven't figured out. Just like in agriculture, there's really no such thing as a weed. A weed is just a plant we haven't figured out how to use. Waste is just material that we haven't figured out how to take back and recycle. And as such, they have a place in the industrial cycle. And we need to have a closed-loop industrial cycle. Now, a deposit scheme on a valuable product like polyethylene terephthalate, which can be woven into fleece, which makes Patagonia garments, those bottles do have value. So putting a deposit on them, getting them back, makes a heck of a lot of sense. Deposit schemes are good. When you have a product that's bad, like styrofoam food containers, that really is the wrong way to deliver food, bans are appropriate, and we've had bans of those in California where I'm from, bans of plastic bags, these thin shopping bags that no one can make a living collecting and turning in for recycling. They need to have thicker bags so that they have a value in reusable bags, reusable bottles. These are all parts of a solution, the most effective way of dealing with this problem.
So have you changed your profession completely? Are you still at sea? Are you still a captain? Or are you dedicated wholly to this venture?
I'm still actively involved in research. And in 2014, we're going to go visit this garbage patch as it receives the tsunami debris from Japan. You know, we don't have enough baseline data to say it's going to double it, triple it. We don't really know, but it's going to add a heck of a lot of material to this garbage patch. And we're going to treat it as a new coastline. I'm taking coastal ecologists out there to study it as if it were a new landmass with new animals living on there that formerly never did. I've seen coral heads growing on this stuff. There are coral reef fish now living in the middle of the ocean. This is a new continent, the last unexplored continent on Earth, and I intend to explore it in 2014.
So you're saying it takes about 3 years for the tsunami rubbish to get all the way out there?
That's right. It's 311 was the tsunami in Japan. We're going to be out there in 814 to have a good look at it.
And what about the scientists in Australia? Who are you talking to here?
Well, Jen Lavers is working on the shearwaters down in Tasmania. I met with her. There's Harry Burton and Cecilia Erickson. They've done the work on Heard Island and Macquarie Island. They found that by doing daily sampling of the plastic on the beaches there, they've had to up their estimate of how much plastic is landing on those islands by a factor of 10. They're with Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies down in Hobart. Jen is doing the work on these shearwaters. Now 100% of them have plastic in their stomachs. So we're really concerned about the microplastics being food for whales as they filter the krill, getting all these shards of microplastic. We're already having the bottom feeding whales, the Eastern Pacific gray whale that sluices the mud out of the bottom of the ocean, get the heavier than water plastics and die. We're worried about these filter feeding whales getting the floating plastics and dying. And we've plenty of toothed whales washing up dead, eating bags and all kind of junk floating in the ocean.
A final question, just to describe you. You've got a nice baseball cap on that says Marine Ambassador, but you've also got a necklace. Would you describe your necklace for us?
Yeah, I like to work with artists, beachcombing artists, because they see this material as something that has to be transformed, and that's my message. You know, we've got to transform our attitude towards plastic. My necklace is from the southernmost beach in the United States, Kamilo Beach on the Big Island of Hawaii. And it was done by Noni Sanford, who's a beachcomber there. And what she's done is to select out, as any human would, the most brightly colored detritus. She's got scraps of pens, rollers from roll-on deodorant, toys, brightly colored scraps and shards of plastic, the tips from Tipperillo cigars, tips from squeeze bottles. She's drilled a hole in it. It's a collector beach. Ancient Hawaiians went there to get logs from the Pacific Northwest. Now it's full of plastic trash from the Pacific Rim. So she's drilled holes, strung it with string, and made a very colorful necklace that is probably getting me as much attention as what I have to say.
Thank you very much indeed. Captain Charles Moore, whose book Plastic Ocean was published in paperback this year. The New York Times called him a hero. Mr. Moore is the first person to have pursued serious scientific research by sampling the garbage patch.